Get myself on a thermal and basically spiral myself up for about 20 minutes to clear all the rocks.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 42 of the audio briefings. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being here. We are really happy to have you. It has been quite a week this week, and there have been some really high highs, personally, and there have also been some very low lows. And without getting into too much detail, we lost a member of our community this week in an aircraft accident. And this person was a pillar of our community. She was a legend. She was somebody who supported others, everybody. She funded scholarships. She mentored young pilots. She was all about getting people flying. And unfortunately, we lost her. And if you were with us the last couple episodes, you heard Gord and I talk about mindfulness and awareness. And we shared some personal stories from our past that involved a friend's accident. And that episode was put out the morning of the accident. And I feel like having that conversation with Gord hasn't made this easier, but it has allowed me to perhaps process it a little bit differently than I may have. I'd like to hope that maybe somebody who listened to it took something away from it and is processing what happened this week and being aware that it is okay. I mean, there's a couple other accidents this week. Unfortunately, there was a tragic one in Alaska. There was another one somewhere else, I believe in Nevada or California, involving two water bombing airplanes. Unfortunately, this is a part of the industry or the sector that we are in. And if you fly long enough, you will lose a friend or friends or colleagues. And it is really important that we keep this conversation going, that we don't stop flying because of it. These people who've lost their lives flying, doing something that they absolutely love, the last thing they would ever want is for any of us to stop flying over it. So with that said, we've got lots of great content coming up. And we will do a follow-up episode with Gord. And with Gord, I'm hoping to cover some things about, you know, PTSD and anxiety scenarios, you know, how the loss of friends in aviation or people that are close to us can affect our situational awareness and our decision making, just to make us more aware so that when we go out in the airplane or at the airport, we're not caught off guard when certain things may trigger memories or certain feelings. And I'm not going to get into that here right now. We're going to save that for a conversation with Gord, probably a couple episodes down the road, but I just wanted to talk about this. The really high high this week, several episodes back, a couple months ago, I shared with you that I was going to go take an introductory helicopter lesson, and I've worked really hard not to talk too much helicopter because I don't want this to turn into just a heli podcast, but it's starting to get more and more difficult because it is so much fun. And yesterday I did my first heli solo. So that was a really high high. And my first fixed wing solo was 19 years ago. And quite honestly, I don't really remember much about it because there have been so many firsts since then. But yesterday was really special. And I was able to do that, cut loose by my instructor, Sam Adams. And I can't even really describe what it felt like other than just shock and surprise, and I hope I don't screw this up. And anyway, we're here to fly another day, and I was hooked and booked another one today. So just went out and did a second day of some solo flying out on in a gravel pit and out at some gravel bars, and I'm absolutely loving it. So we're gonna get Sam on here at some point in the next couple episodes, and while I'm doing my I've got an airline transport license fixed wing to helicopter commercial conversion, Sam, my helicopter instructor right now, is doing a conversion from his commercial helicopter the other way to fixed wing. So we were both talking today while we were sitting there flying, like talking like this, you know, the rotors going. And we thought it'd be really cool to have a chat recorded for you guys about some of the similarities and some of the differences between fixed wing and helicopter flying and transitioning one way or transitioning the other way. We can get into a little bit of a debate about which one is more difficult. We've already had the debate of which one I would rather have an engine failure in, and we disagree on that. But I think that would be a really fun thing to talk about together for all of you, because there's a lot of people that are curious. There's a lot of things I had no idea about before I went down this road, and it is a very dangerous, very expensive road, but I am not regretting 1 hour of it. It is freaking amazing. The other episode that's going to come up here, I'm just looking to schedule some time to record it, is going to be another one with Owen Stacey. And we had an episode with Owen Stacey where we talked about jobs and networking. We're going to continue that networking conversation, but we are also going to talk pilot resumes, some do's, some don'ts, some tips. Because through flightcrew.ca, which we are working on through Cardinal Aviation, again, flightcrew.ca, where you can put your pilot resume, and we try and pair you up with some operators, and we did just pair somebody this week. We're seeing a lot of resumes, and there's some really, really good ones. And there's some that are good, but maybe we can go through a little bit and talk about, obviously, anonymous, so that we can all be better in our job hunt. We can all put our best foot forward the first time. So those are some upcoming episodes that I'm really excited about. I'm really happy where this content is going, that we have access to some amazing people to talk to. And today we're going to talk to Lane Cunningham. And in the last episode, I know I called him Riley. That's his brother's name. But when you listen to this episode and this interview, you'll see why I got it mixed up, because they come from a massive flying family. But before we get there, I'm going to do two things. First of all, I want to thank a couple of people. So as you know, we've got on the website the Support the Podcast page, where you can become an annual subscriber or you can buy us a coffee. And we've had a couple annual subscribers, and they should have by now received in the mail their Cardinal Aviation notebook and their pen and some stickers and a thank you note. And we thank them for their support. We also have an option to buy us a coffee, and there's different sizes and different levels of whipped cream for those coffees. But either way, I just want to say thank you to some people. So I really want to say thank you to David Nickmans. And this episode is going to be brought to you by David Nickmans, who became an annual subscriber. And I also want to thank Mark, Clark, Catherine, and Jeff for the coffee this week. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. The next thing I want to do before we get to our conversation with Lane is read you some messages that we received over the last couple days or the last week. And as I've said at the end of each episode, we really want to hear from you. We really enjoy your feedback. And I have really enjoyed conversing with several listeners over the past week. And it feels really good to know that what we are doing matters. And every one of these bits of feedback I share with the guests that you guys are talking about, they see it and they are just blown away. So the first thing I want to do is read a message from Doug. And this is talking about our session with Owen Stacey, where we talked about if you're laid off or you're furloughed as an airline pilot, get to work doing something else. Nobody's too good for whatever job it may be. We talked about Blake, who's a Cardinal coach, who's laid off from the Airbus 330 and is working in a mine, and how that is an amazing thing to have on a resume. And it speaks to somebody's character. So we got this message from Doug, who is an Air Canada pilot. And he says, "Hey, I really enjoyed the interview with Owen Stacey because it relates so closely to my situation. I was actually kind of embarrassed to be furloughed and that I'm driving for FedEx. I didn't put FedEx on my resume. You guys made me realize I should 100% have it on there. So I changed it right away and resubmitted my resume to flightcrew.ca. So thank you, Doug. I'm really glad that we were able to help you see the light, and we thank you for delivering the world on time on the ground side, and hopefully you can get back to getting people to where they need to go on time on the air side sooner rather than later. The next two messages relate to our conversation with Gord. And the first one is from Pete. And Pete says, "Hey, I just wanted to say that part two of the podcast with Gord was incredible. I really took a lot away from it and heard a lot of things that I've been needing to hear from people in this industry. There's a serious void in aviation for mental health awareness and support. Podcasts like this are truly important." Thank you, Peter. That is, all the motivation we need to keep going. And again, we thank you. And the last one I'm going to read is from Chris. And Chris said, "Hey, mate, I was listening to the podcast today while I was on a layover about pilots' mental and emotional health. I can relate to them for sure. I lost my dad and uncle in two separate plane crashes, and it put me in a pretty bad path for a while. I'm in a great place now, but sure appreciate those in the industry talking about mental health and wellness." So I've had a really good time talking to Chris. The last couple of days we've been conversing. He's a aircraft mechanic. He's a fixed wing pilot and a helicopter pilot. So definitely learning a lot chatting with him and learning some stuff about maybe my future path. I don't know where that's gonna lead, but thank you so much for those messages. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this, to care. And I really hope that you enjoy the content that we have coming up in the next couple of weeks with Gord, with Owen, with Sam. Also going to get Cliff on here, but I'm not going to spoil that one quite yet. That is what we have coming up. So thank you, thank you, thank you. If you want to visit our website, it is cardinalaviation.ca. If you want to see past podcasts, just put a /podcast on that. And we've got some awesome gear there. We've got hoodies, sweaters, hats. I got them all in stock the other day. So if you want any of that stuff, it's all on the website. And make sure you follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation. Okay. Thanks for putting up with me so far. Without any further delay, I want to get to my chat with Lane Cunningham. And this is all about Lane's flight that he did a few weeks ago, ferrying a classic J3 Cub from Calgary, Alberta, or close to it, across the Canadian Rockies, all the way to the West Coast in Victorian. That may not seem like a really long flight, but it's definitely got some challenges when you're in a J3 Cub. So here it is, Lane Cunningham. Okay, well, I'm here with Lane Cunningham, and Lane and I have a lot of kind of mutual connections through the local aviation community, but it's the first time we're actually talking not on the Air Traffic Control Channel. But it was probably about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, I got asked by somebody about a ferry flight, and I asked him what it was, and he said it was a classic J3 Cub from Calgary, Alberta to Victoria, which isn't too crazy of a flight until you mix it with classic J3 Cub. And at that point, I didn't know if it had 65 horse or 85 horse. I knew it didn't have a starter and it didn't have a transponder. And as much as I like flying airplanes around, I don't know, let's be honest, I was 0% excited about moving that. So I told Adrian, the owner, let me try and find you somebody else, maybe in Alberta, that can do it, just because weather is such a thing. And we'll talk about that with Lane. And it was on my to-do list for probably a week to try and find him a pilot, and to try and find a pilot to do that kind of flight is pretty hard to do. And then I'm sitting there at work one day and I see on radar this, the call sign. And I was like, that looks really familiar. And it's a J3 Cub and it's going like 30 knots. No, like 60 maybe. I was working on the ATC side. I said, "Hey, is that Adrian's airplane?" And sure enough, it was Lane, and he had finished the ferry flight. And I was really happy because I unplugged from the radar and I got to remove that from my to-do list. And I just thought it'd be really cool to talk to Lane about that trip. And the other thing is, aviation and ferry flying and coaching and all this stuff is so all about connections and networking. And we all have to work together when we do this. So, I mean, Adrian called me, Adrian called Justin at Hangar 5, and Justin hooked you guys up. So it is really a small world. So why don't I leave it to you, Lane? Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on today.
So how did you get roped into this? And
So basically my mom is doing her private license right now, and we were looking for a private instructor, and Justin kind of fell into our lap. And one day I showed up out to Boundary Bay to see my mom's first lesson with Justin. And as I walked in, they had discussed previously that I might have a flying opportunity to go ferry this J3 Cub from Strathmore or from Indus, Alberta back to Victoria. And so they kind of set me up there, and it was awesome.
You said your mom's doing her license. You come from a flying family. Like, is there anybody in your family that does not fly?
I come from a pretty big family. So, yeah, there is a number of people that don't fly, but I'd say there's probably, I think my mom is now the seventh pilot in the family now.
So let's go. So there's you fly, you're Riley. I don't even know. Like, I don't know the family tree. I just know the name. So
there's my dad, and then my dad's two brothers. So Steve, my dad, and then Terry and Mark, his two younger brothers. My aunt from the other side of the family, Kendall, flies. My brother flies, my brother Riley. And then myself and my mom, Kelly.
That's amazing. And I still want to come to your guys' hangar because it's got some nice equipment in there. It's a pretty sweet toy box. And
Yeah, no, it's a fun garage. Yeah, it's a good man cave.
For sure. Well, and I don't know, what do you call it? What do you call it when your mom starts hanging out there, though? You can't call it the man cave anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the everyone cave.
Yeah, the people, the person box or whatever.
Yeah.
So you met Justin because he was training your mom, and so how long before this flight was that?
It was about a week before, I think. I think it was on a Monday, and then I think the following Monday was when I flew out to Indus and picked up the J3.
And what was your first thought when you just? I mean, you've crossed the rocks before, I'm sure, in a bunch of different airplanes, but probably nothing like a J3.
My first thought was, you know, thank God I got another flying opportunity here. And from there, I was kind of thinking, you know, it didn't first click in my head that it was going to be as challenging as it was. But I quickly learned that it was definitely going to take a lot of thought process and a lot of planning to make it a safe flight home.
And one of the things that I had talked to Adrian about as that would be a challenge would be if we found a pilot from out here, would be getting the pilot out there within a weather like window and opportunity. And I mean, we're in the summer now, and I kind of said it might be better to find somebody out there because then they can get up every morning. Is it good? Is it not? Because one of the risks that always happens if we're going to fly somebody in is they fly out there and then the weather isn't ideal the next day, and now they're sitting away from home and there's hotels and all that stuff. How did you decide when the right time to go was?
Definitely just a lot of GFA checking, a lot of weather checking, and I don't know, based it mostly off of pressure systems. And I needed the right winds aloft because, as you know, it doesn't take much for that thing to start going backwards in the air. I don't know, a lot of weather checking, a lot of planning in advance.
Had you ever flown like a classic J3 before?
I hadn't actually flown an actual J3 Cub before, but I had a lot of time in a Super Cub, a PA-18 Super Cub. So kind of like the older brother, I guess. So some of the knowledge.
Did it translate at all? I mean, your guys' Super Cub's pretty like big, the big tires and everything.
Yeah, surprisingly less than I thought. I thought there was going to be a lot more similarity, but with the J3, I mean, you're sitting in the back seat. So that's first off, you know, there's not much. Not much visibility there. And the J3 was surprisingly a lot more squirrely than the Super Cub, I thought. A lot more kind of catty on the ground, a little more jumpy. I guess because the CFG is further back with just one person in the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
It was there was definitely a lot of similarity in aileron feel and kind of wing, but climb performance and the way it taxied and handled on the ground was world of difference for sure.
And so what did you bring with you for the, like, in terms of preparation? And I mean, that's pretty unforgiving area that you're flying over. What did you bring?
A lot of maps, a lot of bags. I brought big survival coat. I had my Canada Goose on board, which was nice. Lots of just basic warm clothes. That was and we also had a tent on board, which was nice just in case.
And you came across by yourself, obviously, if you carried all that stuff.
Well, so I flew out there with my father in the, we have a Skywagon. So we flew that there, IFR, and then went into Indus, switched around, got a hotel. They flew home, and then I did the ferry trip back. Took me a lot longer.
What, in terms of flight planning, how did you pick your route? Like, what did you look for? What did you end up flying in terms of a route? How many miles was it? All that stuff.
Oh, total miles. I am not too sure off the top of my head. The route that I took, I had to stay, since it had no transponder, I had to stay out of the Class Charlie airspace in Calgary. And then from there, I went Banff area and then down to the Invermere area along the VFR route. Stopped in Invermere for some fuel and then down to just north of Cranbrook. And then north of Cranbrook was where I broke off of the VFR route. And a lot of what I had to keep in mind there was just, since it's no transponder, it can go above 10,000 feet for airspace restrictions. So I needed a window where the mountaintops were below 10,000, but and enough room for me to fly a somewhat underpowered aircraft safely above the mountains without breaking 10,000, right? So just kind of took above north of Cranbrook and then a direct shot to Nelson, which was where I ended up staying the night that night. And yeah, and then from Nelson, we went north of Castlegar, and then I went direct Penticton, and actually just overflew Penticton. It was actually a direct flight from Nelson, and then we went into Boundary Bay, picked up a portable transponder so we could get into Victoria.
Cool. That's how I knew it was you, because I was shocked, like, how does it have it? I didn't think it had a transponder, and it was funny because you were flying down your brother was in the 172, and then there's a couple other BCGA members and a couple other airplanes. We were having a little radio party. It was kind of nice. It was like in the evening, just before it was getting dark, and everyone was chirping off a little bit. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah.
I mean, it seems like everything went pretty much perfectly to plan. Or was there anything that happened that was a little bit unexpected? Or
no, it was pretty. It pretty much went as planned. Let's see. The only thing I was hoping to spend the night in Penticton to make the next day a little shorter so that Adrian could get his airplane a little earlier in the day. But I didn't want to book hotels too far in advance just in case. So I ended up having to go into Nelson for hotel availability. That was pretty much the only thing that didn't go as planned. But yeah, it was good.
And then in any kind of, like, I'm using air quotes, normal airplane, like a 172 or, I mean, like that trip as a crow flies is about 370 miles, if I recall. And then, I mean, you're kind of going up down the valley, so stay in the VFR route, which is obviously the safer option as well, because you usually get more landing options. But how many hours did it take you to do that flight?
I think it was something around 11 hours of airtime or 10 and a half hours of airtime, right in that window. But it was a good 10 hours for sure. It's an enjoyable airplane. But yeah, had to use a pillow in the back seat, that's for sure. It was getting a little firm. It's mostly all wood, I think, just with a pretty small cushion. So
that's awesome. Well, I'm glad you got to enjoy 10 hours in that airplane. I want to fly it, but I didn't want to do that flight in it. So I'm glad somebody got to enjoy it. Would you do it again?
Definitely. Oh yeah, it was loads of fun. I think you know, with the right weather and the right winds, I don't think it was dangerous, and that's pretty much the only thing that would turn me away from doing again. I mean, it was loads of fun. Like I said, it was definitely a new experience. It was a new type for me, and yeah, it was basically just tons of fun.
And Lane, how old are you?
I just turned 20 years old in July. So
okay, you just turned 20, and how many types do you have in your logbook?
I think I'm at 14 right now.
And of all of them, which one's your favorite?
I would say either the Turbo Beaver or the Pilatus right now. Yeah.
Perfect. Both awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, I just really wanted to talk to you because we got to talk briefly on the frequency when you're flying through, and I wanted to hear about the flight. And I think a lot of people would be interested in a trip like that, either from the ferrying aspect or just taking an airplane, a classic J3 Cub, 85 horse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a C85 in there.
Yeah. 85 horse, no transponder, no starter, you're hand propping everywhere.
Yeah. That part was really cool. That was arguably the coolest part about the whole airplane, was learning how to hand prop and, you know, not cutting my hands off.
I feel pretty badass sitting at the airport and you're just like, I'm just going to get out and hand prop this thing.
Yeah. I got a couple good videos of it. It was awesome. Yeah.
I guess the takeaway that I see here that I want others to see is, we talked about it in our episode with Owen, is that kind of networking. Like, you never know when a really cool flying opportunity is going to come up. I mean, Justin was working with your mom. You went out to see your mom, right place, right time. Adrian had asked me, Adrian had asked Justin, Justin asked you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think anytime you're at an airport, it's like a pseudo job interview, and your reputation you build based on, you know, who you know, how you behave, how you fly, how you treat equipment. And I think it's really cool that, that you're able to get this opportunity and get it done. And quite frankly, that you had the balls to do that flight.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Aviation's a small world. I mean, networking helps for sure. You gotta be professional and keep your head on straight.
Is flying like something you want to do career wise, like full on, or is it more of a hobby for you?
Yeah, definitely. No, I really want to fly commercially in the future. Really. Yeah. I want to make that my career for sure.
Any specific type of commercial flying?
You know, I was really hoping to get on with Jazz Air Canada until all the, you know, hiring kind of stopped with coronavirus and whatnot. I have a heavy interest in the military as well. Would love to fly some fighter jets, but, you know, that's all further down the road. So for now I'm sticking to some fun mountain flying and tailwheel stuff.
And you're working right now. Where are you working right now in the meantime?
So right now I've been towing gliders at the Vancouver Soaring Association, and on the side I've been doing some labor work, installing doors for people. And I did some pipeline survey, some ferrying, and just kind of small little jobs here and there.
Awesome, man. Well, I wish you the best of luck. I'm, again, impressed, envious, but not jealous that you did that trip. I want to see some pictures from it, and hopefully some people can learn a little bit from kind of the process that you went through to do it. Is there anything else you kind of wanted to share about it?
One highlight and low light of the trip. It was pretty funny. I got myself caught in a bit of a downdraft just north of Cranbrook. And it was pretty funny. I had to do a little 180 turn back to this mountaintop and get myself on a thermal and basically spiral myself up for about 20 minutes to clear all the rocks between Cranbrook and Nelson. And yeah, I just remember that being pretty cool.
So you're just like funny. Using the sunny side of the valley and knowing where the winds are coming from and all that kind of stuff to get up and over.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And just, I've been doing a lot of gliding lately at the Soaring Center, and just using that knowledge to kind of transfer it. I remember looking at this queue above me, this cloud, and thinking, you know, and all my gliding instruction, they like to ride the bottoms of those queues for more lift. And it actually worked great. And then I could shoot myself right over the top of the mountains, and it was awesome.
Was there a big downer on the other side?
It was more on the east side of it that there was the big downer. And then it was kind of getting shoved to the point I was thinking, oh shit, I gotta start thinking maybe get back on that VFR route and get out of this, get out of these high rocks. But the updraft was shortly on the other side of that. So
that's not the first time that I've heard that gliding can translate really well into powered flying. So do you know, like, did you do power first or glider?
I did all power first. I actually just started gliding about within the last 3 months here.
And have you done a license conversion to glider?
I'm just finishing up my license conversion on the glider right now.
So what's involved in that? If somebody was fixed wing and they fixed wing power and they wanted to go do a glider conversion, what's involved in that?
So basically, I think with a commercial license, to start off, you have to have the P-Star written, which all of us have to write for power flying. So that's kind of out of the way. Other than that, there's no written exam for power pilots to go into a glider. You need, I can't remember the exact amount of solo flights. I think it's 14 solo flights. And then basically you need to do just a check ride with a qualified examiner. And you got your glider license. So just cool. Working on finishing that up right now.
And you can do that out at Vancouver Soaring Center in Hope?
Yeah, Vancouver Sorting Center. You can do it on Invermere. I know CUNM's got a good program as well out just south of Calgary. Yeah, there's a number of them around.
Cool. So there you go. Check out those if you want to look at doing your glider conversion. I was having this conversation actually just half an hour ago when I was driving home with Gord from our last episode. And I was just telling Riley before we started recording, I did my first helicopter solo today, which was sick. And we're talking about, especially as we kind of like get on in our careers, that first, like we kind of run out of firsts. So yeah. I don't know, like doing this today, it just like, it feels freaking awesome. Because it was a first, and you know, there's your first ever solo. And then there's the first flight as a licensed pilot. And then there's, you know, your first jet or your first time in the flight levels. Like I think it's really important, and maybe you can comment on this, just that like, you appreciate every little first, because in aviation there's so many, but there comes a point where you start running out of them and you gotta kind of have to find new first.
Awesome. I completely agree. I remember my first time in the flight levels. I had a big grin on my face for sure. First commercial flight, that was a big one. First flight test pass, that was a huge one too. So I agree. I hope there's a lot more firsts for me in the future.
You got lots ahead of you. First time taking 85 horse through the rocks. So.
Yeah, exactly. First time flying J3s. Yeah.
And flying from the back seat and hand propping an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I guess you don't fully run out ever, but definitely narrows down as you get more experience.
Totally. Yeah. We just got to recognize the first when they happen and appreciate them. Not take any of them for granted, because there's a lot of firsts, but any one of them could be our last two.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You got to respect them.
For sure. Cool, Lane. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on the show today.
All right, dude. Fly safe.
Awesome. Yeah, you too.
So there you have it, our conversation with Lane Cunningham, the 20-year-old pilot that flew a 73-year-old airplane across the Canadian Rockies and had a blast doing it. And Lane has so many more firsts ahead of him. He's going to have an amazing career. You can just hear he's got the right attitude. And we thank you for joining us today. A heartfelt thank you. I don't need to really close this out. I said everything at the beginning. Check us out online, cardinalaviation.ca. Follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation. Thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you so much to our clients. And thank you so, so much to those who have decided to support our podcast. Until next time, fly safely, never stop learning, and take care of yourself.